that you don't have what others have, and that is teaching yourself unfairness, inequality, injustice, and that is the basis and the root for judgment. Because if I don't have what others have, I have to judge and see what is valuable for me, and I have to pick and choose and see which teacher is going to give me outside of myself what it is that I don't have. But what we are not seeing when I make that choice is I'm saying I don't have, I lack. And if there's one thing that I have received from Jesus in A Course in Miracles is that you lack for nothing, Son of God. You are already the Son of God. You already have everything. You have just forgotten. But the way to remember is to forgive yourself for all that you think you know. For you, in this world, you think you know, but you really know nothing. And you give everything meaning, and you give everything a concept, and you are a prisoner of your own meanings and your own concepts. Okay. So we are at 4 o'clock. I'm turning this mic over to you, Doug. I hope I've laid out a nice table for you. The mic is all yours. Thank you.
Testing, testing, 1, 2, 3. Can you hear me? Sound check, sound check. Yes. No? Yes? Maybe? If you can hear me, somebody type yes. If you can't hear me, then we have a problem. Okay. Okay, great. Thank you. All right. Thank you, David. And welcome, everybody. We're here again. It's 4 o'clock. And as usual, when this starts, I'm tongue-tied. I really should write a script so I can just read for the first minute until I get into the flow. But as some of you know, the purpose, more or less, of this slot is to talk about the Ur text. And so we've been trying to pick on themes where the Ur text offers something of a different perspective to other versions. For the most part, all the versions are identical. And after chapter 8, the differences become, for the most part, quite modest. There's an interesting one in the Song of Prayer because there's 6 paragraphs there that don't occur in the later version for reasons that are unknown to me, but after looking at them closely, I don't think the omission was intentional. I think it was accidental that a page got missed when they were doing the copying. I have the first 9 chapters, Doug. Can I get the rest in a different PDF? Okay, now, are you talking about the Ur text, or are you talking about the shorthand notes? You're talking about, okay, Ruby is posting a link that is being discontinued. This week, in fact. Okay, so Deb is talking about the shorthand notes. Okay, now we've got 5 conversations going at once here. This week, because of a number of people expressing concerns or difficulty using the PDF files of the Ur text, which have been on the website for some time, I made HTML files of each of the 7 volumes of the Ur text, which don't require a copy of Acrobat Reader and don't require any capability for using Acrobat Reader, and they probably load faster. And they're also more cuttable and pastable because they don't have hard line endings within paragraphs. And all of those, I now got all 7 volumes.
Doug, apparently when you post a link, you sometimes lose your mic.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so that link takes you to a menu, the main menu. And option 10, the bottom of that menu page, takes you to another menu. And you'll see all 7 volumes of the Urtext there. Click on any of them, and they load in HTML in your browser. The workbook, it's a bit messy. It needs some formatting work, but it's readable. The rest is probably half decent. And the workbook and text are both rather large, so on a slow link, they might take a minute or two to load. The others go quickly. And you'll see a sidebar with a table of contents for each volume. So if you want to pick a particular chapter or section, you click there. All those are also in themselves hot links. So one can take, for instance, you can copy the link location of any section or chapter title and send it to somebody. If they click on it, it will take them directly to that section. So instead of having to say, go to page 506, you can say, click on here, and what will show up for them is exactly that spot. It's not paragraph specific, but it's section and chapter specific within each volume. What is being discontinued, Doug? No, Ruby, what's being discontinued is the link you're posting, because I've reorganized the data on the website so that I haven't actually removed that directory yet, so it's still live. That will still work, but I simply didn't remove it because I didn't get around to it. I plan on removing it. I put the files in different places. So that the top link, again, that's, yes, and I caught my mic getting lost there. That link that I just posted will take you to a menu. Go to the bottom of that page, click on option 10, and you get a menu with all 7 volumes, including the Song of Prayer. Yes, that's the link that's being discontinued because I put the file in a different directory. I actually organized the directory structure somewhat coherently, whereas when I was preparing it for you, I was just slapping it together real quick. Okay. But I'll leave it there for the time being in case people have it, so it'll still work for them. But the other one will work better because it also has a way of getting back where you started. Okay, so, oh, until I get around to removing it. until I get around the maintenance functions, it's not a problem for me to leave it there. Okay, so we now have both HTML and PDF copies of the Urtext manuscripts on the website. And the link for the PDF file, which is configured for on-screen reading and gives you access to all of the Acrobat tools for searching and manipulating the material, which I find useful and prefer for most purposes, but not everybody agrees with me. So whichever you prefer there. There you've got it either way. And here's that link. That's for the PDF file. Okay, so we've covered that ground. Now, Deb was asking about the shorthand notes, which last week I completed the transcription of the text volume of the shorthand notebooks. The first 8 chapters plus chapter 31 have been up for over a year, I think. And those first 8 chapters, there's been some proofing work done. You'll find the current version is a little more accurate and a little neater. And in a moment, I'm going to post the link to the shorthand notebooks. Again, the first 8 chapters are where most of the differences are, though there are differences between the notebooks and the urtext in every chapter. And the material in the first chapter in particular, some of it many people, myself included, have found utterly stunning, deeply moving, quite incredible, really surprising. And this material has never been published before. It's been somewhat available if you could read Helen's shorthand notebooks for a couple of years, because those have been in circulation since 2007. But it's some very interesting stuff. And to help the reader figure out what is different from the urtext, wherever I detected a difference between the notes and the urtext, that material in bold type. So if you just leaf through it, you can actually just, you know, watch for bold type, and there you'll find the stuff that you haven't seen before in the urtext, because it's not in the urtext. Okay, here's the link. Okay, and that will open up a 10 megabytes PDF file. I do not have an HTML file of that, and I probably won't for a while, because the way it's formatted makes it difficult to turn into HTML. It is formatted line by line, page by page, identically with the actual shorthand notes pages. It was not made to be a printed book. It was made to be a reference to line up one page of this with one page of the notes to help people read the notes, to give them a transcript. So every line ending is the same, every page difference is the same, and that's why it's structured the way it is, but that also makes it very difficult to turn into HTML. Okay, thank you for everyone did the shorthand notes. Okay, and is all of it in HTML? No, none of it is in HTML. None of the notes is in HTML. And I have no plans to put it into HTML in the near future, because it's difficult to do it due to the way I've formatted it. Though if there is a great demand, I may put my attention to it. And if somebody wants to volunteer, well, volunteers are always welcome. It is mostly formatting issues, and it's tedious dog work to go through that text file and fiddle it so that it looks good in HTML. Volunteer for turning that PDF into HTML. Well, it's upload it to anybody you want to upload it to. It's the purpose of releasing it and publishing it is so that people can see it and use it and have it and work with it and study it and find any problems that are in it, because it is a first draft. It's not in any way, shape, or form thoroughly proofed. It needs to be thoroughly proofed before we would even consider something like making a print version available. But even in its unproved state, it is far more valuable than nothing at all. And the original facsimile image files are also available on the website, and I'm going to give you that specific URL also. And they're page by page identical to what's in the transcript. So, instead of getting the link, I actually loaded that page. All right, give me the link. Link location, here we are. Okay, that's the notebook pages, and that file is designed to be used alongside the transcript file to check, double check, read Helen's notes the way Helen wrote them, and check my transcription, because some words I'm not sure of, I was guessing. Other words are, you know, the legibility is quite poor. You know, it's not it's not what I call a finished product. It's a work in progress, but it's a useful bit of transcription work. It represents about 2.5 years' work, part-time. By no means was I working on it full-time. Okay, so I was going to say I do more than just the ur-text. You'll also find on that website the Hugh Lynn Casey version as well as the Foundation version, all cross-referenced. So anytime anybody wants to see how a given passage in any version is rendered in the other versions, it's at least possible with those tools to do that fairly quickly. Otherwise, finding the passage can be just incredibly difficult. Okay, Kindle. I don't even know what Kindle is, so I'm going to hand you the mic and you can tell me, okay?
Okay, my computer froze up a little bit. Can you all hear me? Kindle is an e-reader through Amazon, and it's kind of taking over the. It's taking over. Projections are that e-readers will take over from hard charge for it, but it'd be available to people. My computer's doing crazy things. Anyway, so it would just be available through an e-reader, any of the electronic readers, Doug. But I can do the uploading if somebody volunteers to change it to HTML. So, I'll give you the mic back.
Okay, well, we already have the ur-text in HTML, though, as I mentioned, the workbook is some difficult formatting to make it look really pretty. It's being a large book, it would take some days of fiddling to get it looking really nice, but it's at least readable. So that's there in HTML. In the aforementioned links. Okay, so that is by way of introduction for anyone not familiar with. Upload it if you want. I mean, it exists to be shared. It exists to be shared. What? And Ruby can't take the mic. Nice trick, Ruby. I understand why, but okay. Now, we were talking in the evening reflections the last couple of days about some issues that I wanted to talk about today. And they do relate to several concepts that show up in the Ur text in the early chapters in rather different ways than they show up in any of the other versions. And the early chapters, I don't have the quote handy, but in all versions it says this early material, I think it's in chapter 3 or towards the end of chapter 2, it says that this material must be understood as a foundation for the rest of it, or the rest of it isn't going to make any sense. And it's in that early material that the most heavy editing took place, and several topics, what is said about them becomes very different as the editing proceeds. And there can be certainly some debate as to whether the changes are corrections or corruptions, or simply inadvertent mistakes, but the difference is significant and is probably one of the main reasons why the Ur text is actually of interest, because what it has to say about certain topics does give us a different perspective. In particular is the whole issue of worlds. The world is an illusion. The world doesn't exist. But in the Ur text, we find that the world and space and time are said to have been created by God as teaching devices. Oh my God, I just get this warning. Your PC is at risk of virus and malware attack. Your system requires immediate check. System security, yeah, this is malware from somebody who's trying to sell me malware protection. Okay, I can turn that off. Okay, in the Ur text we read that the world, or space and time at least, were created by God as a teaching device for our minds. The world, I'm going to quote here from text chapter 2, section A, paragraph 6. Actually, we'll start in the middle of that paragraph. The world, as defined above, was made as a natural grand division or projecting outward of God. That is why everything which he created is like him. And as defined above, Jesus had told Helen to look up the several words in the dictionary. One of them was world. And he told her to focus not on the first definitions, which had to do with the planet, but onto that notion of a natural grand division or a mental world. We can speak of dividing the world up into, say, the world of hockey and the world of football and the world of baseball. These are natural grand divisions, natural to our minds, but they have little to do with anything physical and don't refer to the planet. Now, the word world is used several thousand times. And almost every instance, when you look at it with that definition in mind, you see that while looking at that passage in isolation, you could understand it, most people would understand it as referring to planet Earth. With that definition in mind, you realize that this world doesn't mean planet Earth. It means the world as ego perceives it. And in chapter 10, this idea is, in all versions, is more clearly articulated and expressed. The world as you perceive it cannot have been created by the Father. World as you perceive it, or your natural grand divisions, cannot have been created by the Father, for the world as you is not as you see it. God created only the eternal, and everything you see is perishable. Therefore, there must be another world which you do not see. The Bible speaks of a new heaven and a new earth, yet this cannot be literally true, for the eternal are not recreated. To perceive anew is merely to perceive again, implying that before you were not perceiving at all. The new heaven and the new earth, then, are new perceptions. What then is the world that awaits your perception when you see it? When you see it, what is this implies there's something there to see, a real world there to see. Every loving thought that the Son of God ever had is eternal. That is really crucial. Every loving thought that the Son of God ever had is eternal. So anytime anybody tells you, oh, it's all illusion and it doesn't matter, you know that, wait a minute, every loving thought is eternal. It's not an illusion, it's real, and it does matter. It's the other thoughts, the unloving thoughts, that are illusions and not real and don't matter. Every loving thought that the Son of God ever had is eternal. Those which his mind perceived in this world are the world's only reality. They are still perceptions because he still believes that he is separate, yet they are eternal because they are loving. And being loving, they are like the Father and therefore cannot die. In the next paragraph, the real world can actually be perceived, and actually be perceived is emphasized. All that is necessary is a willingness to perceive nothing else. For if you perceive both good and evil, you are accepting both the false and the true, and making no distinction between them. This is really critical. I want you to remember that line. For if you perceive both good and evil, you are accepting both the false and the true, and making no distinction between them. The ego sees some good, but never only good. That is why its perceptions are so variable. It does not reject goodness entirely, for this you could not accept, but it always adds something that is not real to the real. So the ego sees what's real, misperceives what's real, adds something not real to it, and that gives you what's described here as a confusing, which that results in confusion between illusion and reality. For perceptions cannot be partly true. If you believe in truth and illusion, you cannot tell which is true. You cannot tell which is the difference between them. And there's another magnificent line about in chapter 26 about the differences and the real world. Salvation stops just short of heaven, for only perception needs salvation. Heaven was never lost, so cannot be saved. Yet who can make a choice between the wish for heaven and the wish for hell unless he recognizes they are not the same? This difference is the learning goal this course has set. This difference is the learning goal this course has set. It will not go beyond this aim. Its only purpose is to teach what is the same and what is different, leaving room to make the only choice that can be made. Now, we can go deeper into that particular concept. Where am I reading from? That last one was text chapter 26, section D, paragraph 5 from the Ur text. Now, what was I? So we have here the notion of good and evil. When we can perceive both good and evil, which the ego can, we get confused and we can't tell the difference. And when we can't tell the difference, we can't tell illusion from reality. And when we can't tell illusion from reality, we are just totally confused. And saying it's all illusion may be somewhat helpful in feeling better temporarily, but it doesn't help us discern what's real from what's not real. And that discernment, that recognition is required. And the purpose of the course is actually to, as I just read from chapter 26, its only purpose is to teach what is the same and what is different. Okay, now, if anybody wants to comment, raise your hand as I try to get myself organized. Now, what is the same and what is different has, and the course's only aim, has to do with levels. Okay, Ruby, yes. Levels and level confusion. Now, when we talk about two worlds, the world as the ego misperceives it. It's a world of good and evil, because the ego judges, you know, has that, the ego is the center of negative judgment. It's bad, it's sinful, it's guilty, it's blameworthy, it must be punished. And that is the world most of us live in most of the time, the world as ego perceives it or misperceives it. Yet there is this other world called variously the real world, the forgiven world, the gate of heaven, and the world of corrected perception. And the Course elsewhere says that its purpose is to get us to exchange our misperception for the corrected perception that the Holy Spirit can give us. And all that's required from that, for that, is a little willingness and forgiveness. Because as long as we're holding grievances in our heart, we can never hear the Holy Spirit's voice. That is a sure block. When we're mad at somebody, when we think somebody's guilty, when we're running around with grievances, we absolutely cannot hear love. The only way we can, in fact, understand anything is to love it. You cannot understand someone you do not love. You can sure judge him. You can come up with all sorts of negative descriptions, but you can't understand without love. And you certainly can't understand anybody or anything the way God understands it if you don't look on that thing with the love of God. As we offer the Holy Spirit the little willingness, the Course tells us, the perception changes. The bricks in my house aren't going to change, but my perception of those bricks changes. And the world I look upon, the forgiven world, is beautiful. It is harmonious. It contains, the Course says, the answer to every problem. It is full of peace. It is a reflection, because it is seen with the eyes of love, it is a reflection of God's own mind. And that world is available in every moment to everyone simply by ditching the judgments, which is not necessarily an easy thing to do. When I say simply, I realize that without training and practice, the idea of getting rid of grievances strikes can be an perceived as an insurmountable obstacle. How can I forgive the man who murdered my sister, for instance? How can I? I mean, such a deeply hurtful thing is not necessarily easy to forgive. And all of us have deeply hurtful things that are not quite so severe, but the whole business of the practice of forgiveness and how to do it is probably something we should go into one of these sessions. There's two levels, there's two worlds and two levels that the Course primarily, almost entirely addresses itself to. Level one, the world as ego sees it, a world of guilt and sin and judgment, and those judgments in our minds is what creates death. The second level is the real world, the forgiven world, a world of beauty, joy, harmony, and miracles. And that is where miracle-mindedness will take us. And when we see the world described in the Course, there's three different kinds of reality descriptors in use. The first is the world of sin and death, the bad world, the dour world, the unhappy dream. Another synonym for the real world is the happy dream. And this metaphor of dream is used quite a lot, as we all know. The second level is the world as the Holy Spirit perceives it, which is this joyous place, and that's the second level of perception. And the Course is almost entirely aimed to overcome the blocks to the awareness of love's presence so that we can see that second world, that real world, the world the Holy Spirit sees, the joyous, beautiful, happy dream. There's a third kind of reality descriptor. Okay, wait a minute. The second kind of reality descriptor, the real world, is numerous times described in glowing terms. A world of beauty, harmony, peace, joy, birds singing and grass growing and all sorts of wonderful things. The third kind of reality descriptor is totally different from either of those two. And it says essentially, there is no world. It doesn't exist. And that level of perception is the level of perception beyond space and time. In eternity, perception itself doesn't even exist. So this is really not a third level of perception. It is a meta level. It is a transcendent level beyond perception itself. And when we reach it, we will no longer have any need for perception or planets or bodies, presumably. But the Course is not aimed at taking us to no world. The Course is aimed, and it very explicitly and very frequently emphasizes, it's aimed at taking us into the real world, where everything is happy and joyous and loving, and we have forgiven all. And then it clearly says God takes the next step. The real world is characterized as the gate of heaven. When we reach the gate, God takes the next step, and it says the earth is translated into heaven. Earth is translated into heaven. That is the process the Course lays out for remedying our experience of living in level one ego perception full of misery and suffering. We need to essentially forgive every one of our judgments, look with love on everyone and everything. The world is transformed, not necessarily physically transformed. The bricks aren't necessarily going to change instantly, though I wouldn't be surprised if they do. but the world, our experience of the world is transformed into one of eternity, where, I mean, every loving thought is an eternal thought. And if our thoughts day by day are loving, we are living in eternity. We are living essentially in heaven instead of hell. Even though we're still at the realm of perception and in space and time, our experience can be thusly divine according to the Course. And according to quite a few human beings who've actually tried this and advanced to that state. So level confusion then implies that we're getting confused between which level of perception we're talking about and not recognizing the difference between the ego's confusion and the Holy Spirit's clarity. And both voices speak to our minds. The Holy Spirit generally, ego generally speaks first, we're told, but if we ask, we can hear the Holy Spirit also. If we ask before we make a decision, and that would refer us back to chapter 30 in the Rules of Decision, which I think everybody should read at least once a day. Okay, I'm going to stop and read for a minute, and I'm going to put down the mic in case anybody wants to pick it up as I take a drink here. No part of the world you see but is made up of your attack thoughts. Okay, now, the world you see, what is the world you see? Generally speaking, it's my belief that to properly understand that statement and every statement like it in the Course, the world you see, or this world, means the world as ego sees it. A few times it's spelled out, the rest of the time it's implied. The world as you, through your ego, see it is but made up of your attack thoughts. Obviously, the real world made up of your loving thoughts is not made up of attack thoughts. So we are talking about ego's negative judgments on what it sees. Scott, does that see with the body's eyes? Generally speaking, if we confine our vision to the body's eyes, we're only looking at the surface of things or form, and we're never going to see the content or the explanation of things. And so one does need the spiritual eye to interpret what the body's eyes see, I would say. And Martin, I'm not sure what you mean by bottom up versus top down. But I'll let you explain that. Ruby, miracles rearrange perception and place all levels in true perspective. This is healing because sickness comes from confusing the levels. Yeah. Yep. Okay, now that is pretty much what I had prepared. And I want to sort of sum up with noting that we need to recognize the difference between what is real and what is illusion. Otherwise stated, that is recognizing what is true and what is false. And that doesn't mean that we pass negative judgment on the falsehood or illusion. And that's another, I think, common trap that the ego lays for us. You know, the ego is the one who wants to see sin and sinner. And so when we say that reality is good and illusions aren't so good, ego jumps in there and says, so illusion is sin. All right, now we can throw all our grievances and vengeance and attack thoughts at illusions. Yeah. the ego doesn't care who it judges as long as it can judge something negatively. The illusion, you know, as the Course also stresses, is a mistaken perception. It's not a sin. And what do you do with a mistake? You fix it. You correct it. You don't punish it. And you don't punish yourself for having illusions. And you don't punish your brother if he gets stuck in an illusion. But the other thing I want to, I guess I want to, I have a bit of a quibble with, and I want to pick a bone with, is the instruction that I often hear from people that everything is an illusion. That is true at level one. From the ego's point of view, from ego level, nothing is at least wholly true. The ego sees some good, some reality, but it always adds something that's not true to it. So in that sense, it's not everything is an illusion. It's just everything's unreliable at the ego level, but the ego can still see some stuff quite correctly. It just never sees it entirely correctly. But at the Holy Spirit level, everything is everything is real because it is loving. And while the form is illusory in the sense that it is time-bound and not eternal, the content, the love, is eternal. So there is reality to it. And our experiences, if we dismiss them as mere illusions, they cease to have their teaching value. We absolutely need to experience our experience and recognize that we have created it for our learning and not say it's just bad or it's just an illusion or it should just be denied or it should just be ignored if it's unpleasant. No, we would simply miss the lesson then. The lesson is, if I'm experiencing this, unpleasantness, disaster, trouble, whatever, why have I created this? What does it have to teach me? Because for sure, it's reflecting to me what I need to learn because it came out of my mind or I would not be experiencing it. My experience of whatever came out of my mind. The whatever may have come from anywhere, but my experience of it, how I relate to it, is mine. And that may be an illusion, but it's the illusion that's on my curriculum for the day. This is the mistake that needs to be corrected for me right now. And saying it's an illusion implies that it's not important, that I don't need to pay attention to it, that if I just look away, it will go away. And if it's my stuff, that's absolutely not true. It may, you know, I may ignore it or deny it or evade it for the time, but if it's my stuff, it will come back. And it will keep coming back until I actually deal with it, until I actually learn what it is teaching me. And Okay, so we're at 4:45. I'm not going to go beyond 5 o'clock today. If what's his name doesn't show up. And I have pretty much covered what I want to cover. So if anybody wants to jump into a discussion or a comment or a question, I'm going to give up the mic for the moment. And I realize, Ruby, you have to type yours, but I'll read them if you type.
I'm dropping in pretty late, and I apologize for that. I'm just returning from the radio studio from our weekly live show. But thanks, Doc, for pointing that out, because I just wanted to jump in quick as you invited us to say something. It's interesting. It's so wonderful to see the orchestration because... Hi, Ruby. Hi, everyone. Hi, Christian. I see that Christopher from London is there. I wanted to thank him for his kind remarks yesterday night. But to the topic that you're addressing, Douglas, it's so important because to me, at least, a couple of days ago, we were touching on this, and it seems like it's an orchestration and a phase that Miracle students and people who are busy with A Course in Miracles, not only to, you know, bliss out and be there, but also do the work and deepen their understanding of A Course in Miracles, it seems so important, the distinction between the bottom-up correction of A Course in Miracles and the top-down correction, because you just laughed about my comment, so I'm just, you know, want to say, the top-down correction thing would be to dismiss everything which is going on as illusion, so it doesn't matter, it's irrelevant, and we don't have to, you know, think about it and just ignore it. And the bottom-up correction is the one in A Course in Miracles that Jesus actually advocates and teaches his students, you know, to not look away, and I'm very grateful that you're mentioning this. Because to deny, and he says it in the psychotherapy pamphlet, to dismiss the effects of the miscreative views of mind as irrelevant is also to depreciate the power of mind. And it says, Jesus says very clearly, God created space-time in order for us, the members of the sonship, to convince ourselves of our creative abilities. And this includes... to learn that, you know, engaging in silly stuff like authority problem and separation thought system and creating an ego and usurpation tyranny of the ego and losing it all like a child being afraid of its own toys, it serves a purpose. So in the end, when we are ready for the real world, we will have learned that misusing our creative power in the likeness of God isn't such a good idea. So the bottom-up correction will always correct the Trojan horse that is on our hard drive there where it is, and not just the symptoms of it. So it's like, it's a nice analogy. Just get to the core of it. But how do we do that, Doc? If you could elaborate on this a little bit, you're quite familiar with the stuff, with the material. How do you get to the core of it more effectively? That would be a question to you, and thanks for your lecture. Thanks for letting me share.
You're quite welcome, Martin, and thanks for your comment. The how-to is a big topic in terms of my understanding of the how-to, but in a nutshell, it means being scrupulously honest about your feelings, not trying to deny when you're mad or upset. Obviously, one has to be careful in social situations of how we express our feelings and to whom we express them, and use some discretion in that. But we can't use discretion in being honest with ourselves. We have to be scrupulously honest. If you piss me off, I need to recognize, not deny, not hide from my feelings. What I also have to recognize is that you're not causing my feelings. I am. You can do whatever you want, and I can think of it whatever I want, but what I think of it is my responsibility. So you never piss me off. I choose to be pissed off by what I see you do or how I interpret what you do. So that is being honest about the feelings, taking responsibility that these are my emotions and they're not your fault. And changing you, fixing you, killing you isn't going to change my emotions or my choices. So it's not what's out there that's causing me to feel what I feel. It's me causing me to feel what I feel. That is the first critical step. And that is where the notion of dismissing experience as, oh, it's just a dream, it doesn't matter, is so unhelpful, because it tends to paper over what's really going on, what we're really experiencing. And that experience is there to teach me something. And it's to teach me that what pisses me off in you is something in me. It's a mirror. When you piss me off, I'm looking in a mirror. And my ego is projecting my own belief and my own guilt onto you. And so that forgiveness that begins with, I forgive you for what I imagine you did to me, turns next, in the course terms, to I forgive you for what you didn't do, and ultimately I'm forgiving myself for believing that I was guilty. And that negative experience of seeing guilt out there is simply a reflection of my belief in my own guilt. And that's another illusion, because I'm not guilty. In God's eyes, you know, I may be mistaken, but I'm not guilty. And there's a big difference between being mistaken, having misunderstood, misperceived, and being a guilty sinner, which is an uncorrectable condition. From there, offering the Holy Spirit the little willingness, the experience of forgiveness can take place, and with it, the liberation. So not only does my anger at you for you being such a bastard go away, my guilt for having all the same instincts and inclinations myself goes away, and I'm released and free to love you and love myself. Thus dissolves a block to the awareness of love's presence. And that process can occur, and I believe needs to occur every time, or at least almost every time, we run into an experience of something that we think is bad, sinful, awful, horrible, frightening, terrible, guilty, deserving of punishment, whatever. That we need to recognize that it's not what those guys out there are doing that is causing my emotion. It's me. And there is a process through which that can be released, and in that process, miracles frequently happen. And at the very least, in a situation where other people are having a fight or something, and I'm not happy about it, or I'm even feeling frightened by it, by releasing my own fear and my own judgment of them, I become capable of acting in that situation constructively for all concerned, and being a vehicle for the Holy Spirit to influence others who may be caught in deep confusion and pain themselves. But as long as I'm reacting from fear or anger or judgment, I'm completely useless to God, I'm useless to my brothers, and I'm useless to me. And that's a very quick 6-minute summary of something that maybe I should plan to spend an hour on one of these weeks. Okay, back to the board. Scott's got his hand up. And I'm going to give you the mic, Scott.
Thanks, Doug. I wanted to give you, I know I've thanked you already, but you've been very influential, very key, and changing my habit in just, you know, denying the world, which is really what I'm conscious that I was doing before, and moving past that. So thank you. And I wanted to address Maz, because, you know, the whole incident yesterday with you and Dove in the room, it really just set off this whole chain reaction of learning for me yesterday that, wow, it went on for like, it took me like 6 or 7 hours before I finally, wow, understood what I was finally willing to listen. And part of it I wanted to address, Maz, is that I think both methods will work, the bottom up and the up from the top down, and that the Holy Spirit gives us what we need at that moment. Maybe for some people the top down method will work, and maybe for other people the bottom up will work. There's no one way, is what I'm saying. But I do think when you think of the top down method, it's not going to work if you deny the existence of what you're looking at. It's not about denying or focusing that it doesn't exist or it doesn't matter, which is exactly what Doug is teaching, right? I think he's helped me come to realize that it is possible to save time going using that top-down method, but it has to do more with the forgiving, realizing, I guess the bottom-up method would be, I see an error and I turn it over to God. So the errors keep coming up. You're kind of letting go of you know, peeling the onion, so to speak. And the top-down method would be, I see no error. And when you can say, I see no error, with real truth, that means you've already forgiven what's there. You've already somehow gone through the process to forgive it, and it's actually, you see no error there. And that would be, for me, the top-down method, which, you know, I tend to go with the first one, because the second one, I don't know. You know, but I have had experiences where, poof, like magic, I realize it's just, there is no error there. So for me, it's not about one or the other. It's that in the end, we trust the Holy Spirit will give us what we personally need at that moment, whether it be top down, bottom down, right and left, who knows. I will be given what I need at that moment. You know, it's the trust issue. Thanks.
Doug, I just want to say thank you for giving me the opportunity to see these notes. I'm talking about the link, of course, that Doug is placing on the board. I can't see the board because I'm looking at that, where that link leads to. And I just like to take this opportunity really to show my gratitude, Douglas, because these notes for me are very exciting. We know that in his profession, the teacher of God gives voice to God's voice, gives his messages. And please understand me, to see written in short and longhand, in human handwriting, this is a course in miracles, please take notes, is to me, is a very miraculous thing to see that in what seems to be human handwriting. That anybody could be so bold as to take in a dictation on such a thing and to see it in a sort of live human hand, as it were. To me, that cuts right through to the quick. Because if I heard a voice saying to me, this is a course in miracles, please take notes, I would fall off my chair. So thank you. I see we haven't got time But I'm thanking you profusely from the bottom of my heart, Douglas. Thank you. You will see miracles through your hands, through me today. Thank you. I'm thanking a few more times, but I haven't got time on the mic. Bye-bye.
Yeah, that is the opening line of the first page, October 21st, 1965, I think it was. You will see miracles through your hands, through me, which theme concludes the gift of God, where God himself is speaking of the hands of Christ returning to himself. It's really quite an elegant connection there, and I'm kind of totally astonished that got edited out. Anyways, Bastian's not here yet. He's on at 5 o'clock. So if people want to keep talking, we can do so. Dove, you may want to make a comment here or take over, but I'm going to step back and catch my breath and then go have dinner. So thank you everyone for your input and your comments and being here, and you're welcome to all those expressions of thanks. And thank you, Ruby, for recording this. I guess I'm done. Here's the mic to whomever wants to pick it up.
Thank you, Douglas, again. I'm not sure why Bastian Berendi isn't here just yet, or even if he's coming in today. But I want to thank you again for your enormous work that you've done for me, and I have to say that I will take it in considerably. I think that's a very appreciable kind of work, particularly given that Jesus' words were close to Don says Bastian has gone missing the last few weeks. Puff. I think Jesus' words were close to studying and paying attention to detail is necessary, and I think your attention to detail is appreciable, Douglas, and I thank you once again. And with that, I'm going to hand this mic to Maz.
Of course. Course in How to Know Yourself. A Course in Integration. A Course in Reversing Your View of Giving. A Course in Saving Time. A Course in the Changeless Will of God. A Course in the Holy Spirit's Thought System. A Course in the Laws of Healing. A Course in the Obvious. A Course in the Power of Your Own Thinking. A Course in the Recognition of Truth. A Course in Universal Experience. Course in which you cannot fail. A course in your one responsibility. A course on love. A course requiring willingness to question every value that you hold. A course to open up the path of light. A course that is important to you. A course that promises joy. A course that requires almost nothing of you. A course that you have not forgotten. A course to prepare you for knowledge. To set you free. A course to teach you what you are. A prerequisite course for other courses. A special form of the universe.
These self-descriptions are found in the material, and what intrigued me the most, I have to admit, and I was asking the question yesterday, anyone with an idea on this, if it's a prerequisite course for other courses, that would mean that when we have graduated, because he says there are no, quote, midterm marks, but we cannot fail it, and when we graduate, obviously, the Holy Spirit will have to teach the sonship some more. I don't even know what that would be, but I'm kind of curious because this course is already, you know, wow. Any ideas about that, friends? I don't know. Prerequisite course for other courses. And he told that to Bill because Bill was Dr. Bill. Okay. It says it in the original dictation in the only Course in Miracles that there is, because I'm of the opinion, because my guidance tells me so, and it's a reasonable thing to think. The moment of whole mind, Christ mind, transmitting A Course in Miracles to split mind is what Jesus actually gave to Helen and what Helen took down. And in the original material, you will find. You will find the exact wording, a prerequisite course. You just have to take the document and do a search, word search on it. I don't know which version you are using, Christian. I don't know. I'm using the retyping of the UrTypeScript. It's a PDF document. I don't know which version you got. But if you have an electronic version of the original transmission, you can find it in there. Prerequisite course. No matter. Well, it matters to me, so I'm just asking it. Kike Douglas comes. Okay. Okay, I'm just wondering. It's one of the self-descriptions, prerequisite course for other courses. So there's more to come. Let's get on with it. Thank you so much. Love you all.
I didn't say, Maz, that it was no matter that you asked the question. I said it was no matter which page it was on, because anyway, I don't have the urtext that you're talking about. I don't have an urtext at all, in fact. What I do have in front of me is Helen's shorthand notes in the second edition. I have never heard of the word prerequisite. I've heard of the word required. And the word required, thank you, the word required means that it's not an option, it's not optional. It's required for the purposes of sanity. Prerequisite having a different meaning in my understanding of English, which is good, certainly meaning there's another course following. Now, you may have heard with Holy Spirit's inner ears or eyes that there is another course, I don't know, and that may be where the prerequisite is coming from. Certainly my feeling is you could have a more refined course with additional material. Those are the words that are coming from within, additional material. And certainly there's no improvement for a human being on the lesson, I am the Holy Son of God himself. I cannot suffer loss, I cannot be in pain, nor fail to do all that salvation asks. By the time I've reached salvation, I won't need words. And there may be a further course in creation and eternity. And so the only thing you could do with A Course in Miracles is have additional material. Doug says the word prerequisite does show up 10 times in the urtext, but not in reference to the course. The word prerequisite. What does it turn up in reference to, Douglas? Is it that the text is a prerequisite to the lessons? Is it that the text is a prerequisite to the lessons? I'm just going to read what Maz is saying. Here's what Jesus says to Dr. Bill Tetford. Bill was quite right in maintaining that this course is a prerequisite for his. Bill was quite right in maintaining that this course is a prerequisite for his. Ah, Douglas says he's mistaken. Martin is right. Bill was quite right in maintaining that this course is a prerequisite for his. Another teacher? Who is that in reference to? What is the context? Maz says, really saying much more than that. The purpose of this course is to prepare you for knowledge. I see your hand is up, Maz. I'm going to hand it over to you. Thank you.
Yeah, just very, very briefly. Thank you, Christian. I think if I recall right, the historical fact is that Dr. Bill was asking, I mean, we all know that he was in communion with Dr. Helen. They had a working relationship, and which didn't work that well. The same thing, by the way, that occurred in the 1930s in England when two listeners were asking for a better way. It's the same thing. God calling, for me personally, is a better course, which was transmitted to non-academics, to a couple in who stayed anonymous in the 1930s in England. If you check it out, it's called thetwolisteners.org, I think, and it's God Calling, not Godite, which is, if you read it, a completely different thing. Maybe somebody else took it down. But what happened in the 1930s was the same that happened in the 1960s in New York. Essentially, two people agreeing to find a better way. And as far as I can recall, it was Dr. Bill saying there must be a better way, and it was Dr. Helen saying there must be, I join you in finding the other way. And somehow this seems to be related to Bill Thetford actually being addressed here. I don't know if Bill started AA, I have no idea. But it seems that these two events are related. Bill asked for a better way, and Helen joined him to find the other way. And maybe, I don't know, I think that Bill and Helen are still very much concerned about the deliverance of the original dictation in the world to the sonship. But I think that maybe the different ways that they process the message, in which we know that Helen once said, I know it's true, but I don't want it, and Bill somehow accepted it a little more easily. But anyway, back to the point, prerequisite course for other courses, that's what I deduct from the statement from Jesus to Bill, that it is a prerequisite course for his, and that allows the conclusion that after graduating this one, the Holy Spirit has some more training to do. Maybe yes, maybe not. I leave it in the middle. It's just a speculation, and I wanted to ask everyone how they think and feel about it. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Maz. I'm feeling very happy to explore. Douglas, I don't have text section 3, part G, 43 of the Urtext available that you've quoted there. So I'm wondering if you can give me the context, like the sentence before or after that sentence. Bill was quite right in maintaining that this course is a prerequisite for his. Because personally, I would need context to understand that sentence. Standing alone, the nearest meaning I could decipher would be, Bill was quite right in maintaining that this course is a prerequisite for his Bill's course. Thank you. Thank you, Douglas. Bill was quite right, he says, in maintaining that this course is a prerequisite for his. However, he was really saying much more than that. The purpose of this course is to prepare you for knowledge. So is the only real purpose of any legitimate course. All that is required of you as a teacher is to follow capital me. I'm thinking what's coming from within is that Bill had a slightly different course from Helen in an adjustment of attitude. Douglas says, goodness, a lot of things. Okay, Colleen has a question. Can you further explain, prepare you for knowledge? Yes, it means knowledge of heaven. It means experience of the eternal. Douglas is, for those of you listening on the radio, Douglas has written quite a lot of the Urtex context onto the ACI and Gather board. And since no one's got their hand up, I'll attempt to read this as she swallows her gum. Whenever anyone decides that he can function only in some roles but not in others, he cannot but be attempting to make a compromise which will not work. If Bill is under the misbelief that he is coping with the fear problem by functioning as an administrator and as a teacher of interns, but not as a teacher of students, he is merely deceiving himself. He owes himself greater respect. We all know such individuals. There is nothing as tragic as the attempt to deceive oneself, because it implies that you perceive yourself as so unworthy that deception is more fitting for you than truth. Either you can function in all of the roles you have properly undertaken to fill, or you cannot function effectively in any of them. What a beautiful statement. What beautiful statements from Jesus Christ. What beautiful confidence he has in the sonship. This decision is open to no compromise whatever. When Bill says he cannot teach, he is making the same mistake that we spoke of before, when he acted as if universal laws applied to everyone except him. This is not only arrogant, but patently untrue. Universal laws must apply to him, unless he does not exist. We will not bother to argue about this. This is an all-or-none decision. You cannot make inappropriate level distinctions within this choice. You are either capable or not. This does not mean that you can do everything, but it does mean that you are either totally miracle-minded or not. And I think that follows then, Douglas, the statement, Bill was quite right in maintaining that this course is a prerequisite for his. However, he was really saying much more than that. The purpose of this course is to prepare you for knowledge. So is the real purpose. So is the only real purpose of any legitimate course. All that is required of you as a teacher is to follow capital Me. Yes, Maz saying that he knows what that means. Maz in fact saying my, yes. So it seems we've got some miracles through at last. It seems that Bill's course was as a teacher. I think that's the individualized curriculum that we spoke of yesterday and I think the day before, Maz, I believe. I'm going to hand this mic over to you. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Christian. It does seem to me that this needs another look in the sense that we could be facing the challenge of a level of confusion again. So we should take another look at that. But why I said I know what this means is that I think that if you look at the updated model of Sigmund Freud's model of the psyche, and Jesus talks in the Urtext, in the original, in his transmission, the only real Course in Miracles because it's the moment of transmission from whole mind to split mind. He's commenting on the model of the psyche, and he says the superconsciousness, that's where knowledge is. It's outside of perception. There's no perception at all. We receive revelation from the superconsciousness, which is the home of our soul in the Trinity, this part of the sonship, part of the Trinity. And in every psyche, human psyche, this model applies, obviously. So, knowledge, prepare you for knowledge, means to get in touch with your soul. At least one aspect of it, as I experience it, is get in touch with your soul. Jesus says, I cannot lead your egos unless you associate them with your souls. That means the ego must be taught, quote unquote. There is the questioning department in the psyche, which we have to face as a human being, as mankind, having invented levels in the first place. So the be prepared for knowledge is to be prepared to meet your own soul and to have the soul knowledge, which is outside of perception, permeate your consciousness, while the miracle impulses come from the lower level of the subconscious. The subconscious level, the subconscious in the psyche, is divided into two parts by Jesus. He says, Freud didn't go the whole way with me, and I was with him, and he hesitated, he wasn't ready, but here am I to explain you that I tried to lead him there, and he did great work, so I'm updating his model now. That's what Jesus says in A Course in Miracles. And, not verbatim, but paraphrased. So what is in there is, I think, prepare you for knowledge is, in this context that Doug just posted, thank you, Doug, is to make you aware that the ability and the potential is in you. So never, and he's talking to each and every one of us, never cast away or never deny whatever talent you have to serve in the atonement, to serve in contacting your soul and be a soulful person, a person with intuition, with inspiration, with listening to the inner guide, because you think you're not capable, because the world thinks you're not capable, because you have all kinds of limitations to do that. And I was saying I know what he's talking about, because I have a lot of talents, and sometimes it's really scary because I don't know which way to go with them. I didn't know which way to go with them and how to share this with anybody else without the danger that people would crucify me for having something they don't have. So I think Bill, and I have a lot of affinity with what is said in the material and what Bill, what the messages are. You know, it takes courage. You have to really trust and surrender, which is also a theme that David was, you know, giving as a big one the last couple of weeks, developing trust to follow the impulses and be prepared for knowledge. Because if knowledge comes over you, people would, you know, easily mistake it as something, you know, not appropriate on the worldly level. So I think it's wonderful that we all have the courage. We respond to the call. Everyone is unique and individually equipped to associate our egos with our soul and allow Jesus. And here comes the crux of it, and therewith I want to let go of the mic again. The crux of it is, if you look up the original material and Christian, you should maybe get a hold on the typescript or any material of Doug Thompson put out there. Doesn't matter what you got, or the hand script. The Sanskrit is a little more difficult to decipher. But the point is that Jesus says that the sub-level of the subconscious, so he divides the subconscious in two different levels, a lower level of the subconscious and a more superficial level. He says, I want to be in charge, I should be in control of your lowest level of the subconscious, which means, and it does remind me of the old Christian saying, I let Jesus in my heart. Jesus, you know, I let him into my heart, because that's such an intimate relationship then, you know, to share your own psyche with a brother who's done the whole thing, who's been a human being, and has went, who went the complete way and completed it, and who is in an excellent position to teach the rest of us how to get there by saving time. It's a wonderful thing. It's so intimate. So just try it tomorrow. You know, just sit down, close your eyes, ask Jesus to take your hand and accept him into the sub-level of your subconscious and see what happens, because he says the miracle impulses come from the lower subconscious and they are behind every other phenomenon that you can experience in the consciousness. And of course the revelations are there, but they are one-way communications. They're not two-way communication. We still keep, you know, filtering out this stuff, and less doing it the more we proceed in doing the lessons and following his lead. Thank you.
Thank you, Maris. You certainly seem to be familiar with the psychological terms used more extensively in the Ur text, I believe, than in the second edition. Psychology, Freudian and otherwise, was something that I was led to learn and study and believe when I was 19 years old. I'm currently 44 years old in the illusion, but I had a prerequisite interest in psychology, and certainly I find that the idea of levels, the subconscious and the superconscious and so on, helpful in natural expressions of experience and piecing together an understanding of what can happen when you apply the material. Oh, Doug Thompson saying, I did Freud when I was 19 too. Yeah, well, I'm grateful for that reflection, Doug. It's always given for pardon. Reflection is always given for pardon, isn't it, in this live course, live classroom. What does that mean you did Freud? Douglas, of course, is a scholar. I'm getting the feeling he was bemused by Freud and left it aside, but that's for Douglas to confirm or otherwise. I love that word pointer coming up on the board. It's as if A Course in Miracles is a compass, and the needle seems to swing. The needle in a compass kind of swings uncertainly in the sense that it has a left-right motion or clockwise, anti-clockwise motion, but it also has a vertical motion within the case. If the case is held face up, put on a table, for example, of a compass. Some of these words in the course can point very accurately to the problem within, the block that needs clearing, but without practice, without actually getting down in your drains and getting your hands muddy and dirty, nothing will happen. Xenophane says, since all illusions of salvation have failed you, surely you do not want to remain in the clouds looking vainly for idols there. No, we're clearing them. We're clearing the clouds within one so the light can shine through, right? That's the understanding. Those clouds are arising from guilt within me. If anyone wants the microphone, please raise your hand. Douglas went cross-eyed trying to understand Freud's thinking. Well, since nothing I means anything. You did the Freud course at university. Freud was obsessed with guilt, never understood forgiveness. Xenophane says, try to pass the clouds by, whatever means appeals to you. If it helps you, think of me holding your hand and leading you, and I assure you, this will be no idle fantasy at all. Colleen mentions there the Jungian shadow. Freud was very interested in neurosis, which really would just be the fear of God, right? The repetitive ritual by which I delay my homecoming. Douglas is saying, as Jung later concluded, Freud was afraid of his own shadow. That's lesson 8, past the clouds. Yeah, I think it's very helpful. what's given to me is the handing over of the shadows, of holding no private thoughts, the idea becoming manifest in the mind, using the idea so that the mind can then experience the handing over of the fears, of the shadows, of what happened yesterday, of why I'm not learning what I'm supposed to be learning, any feeling of emergency, crisis, shortage, lack, hatred, fear. Give them over because they aren't truth. Maz is pointing the way back to what you think with love means everything love. What you think with love means everything. A love is the only meaning. All loving thoughts are true and eternal. I love you. Right. All loving thoughts are true and eternal. Douglas is saying, think of me holding your hand and leading you. And I assure you that this will be no idle fantasy, lesson 8. I see that's the second time you've written that on the board for me to look at, Douglas. Think of me holding your hand, says Jesus, the teacher within, and leading you. So is that a presence? Or is that not a presence, really? Because I assure you, says your inner teacher, that this will be no idle fantasy. This lesson will be learned. You will row your boat ashore. This will be no idle fantasy. You will leave this world behind. Bye, Scott. It will be no idle fantasy because the land that you seem to be seeing is an idle fantasy. So you're beginning to find something more real within you. You can row away from the idle fantasy and make a comparison and see which you like better. Xenophanes is pointing to lesson 70. I don't know what that is. The Unhealed Healer is where my book has fallen open. I'm looking to lesson 70. My salvation comes from me, the one within, the Holy One, where I am led by me. I wholly lead myself away from fantasy. No one leaves himself in an illusion, that's ridiculous. No one leaves himself in a coffin. If I could stay in a coffin, I'd be there for my last lifetime. Mas says, Ken taught me that in a WAP shop. Ken taught me that in a WAP shop, that this will be no idle fantasy. Yes, says Jesus. I'm going to walk through there. I'm going to hold your hand, and I'm going to take you up to eternity. I see Colleen wants the mic, so I'm going to hand this over to you, Colleen, since I can find my mouse. Over to you.
Hi, everyone. Thanks very much, Christian. Can I be heard? I just want to make sure, because we had a power outage, so I lost my internet. So I just, you can give me a thumbs up. Oh, I can be heard. Terrific. I just had a question. This is for anyone in the room. This is such a, I'm so glad I was able to come on at this time. It's great teachings. But I've been doing the course for about 11 months, and I do teach here. Usually I did on Tuesdays and Sunday. Now it's just Sunday because of my schedule. But I've been doing about 11 months, and I went through a couple months of a lot of turbulence, and some people who are here have kind of gone through the journey with me. And then I went through a period of relative, very peaceful time, where I was really doing the course. I wanted to be the love. Then as I began to really grasp, it became almost reading the course. At first it was very esoteric, and that was 4 years ago. And then it came to me again 11 months ago, as I said. But it seemed as the more, as of late, it seems that the fear is even more gripping than ever, even though I have, and this is the ironic part, even though I have a much deeper understanding of, it's almost easy, an easy read to me now. And a lot of miracles have happened in my life, people coming into my life, opportunities, and yet I feel more fearful than ever. And I know this process of the undoing. And I was wondering if anyone could speak about their experiences of that. Whether fear basically of really a completely surrendering, I think that's what it is. That's what comes to mind, is completely saying that, getting rid of all my doubt, surrendering, saying I'm just going to live by spirit. I'm actually going through this with someone who I met at Be the Love. We're both going through that whole idea of surrendering, not having doubt, because I'm a very real control freak, and I cannot. There's absolutely, I'm delaying it quite a bit, but there's no way of going back, because the course, it just resonates with me, and I know I'm on the brink of something amazing, and I can feel it. And every time I felt that, it's manifested, and I've had amazing things happen. So I was just wondering if you could speak up if they've gone through that. The more you begin to understand the course, sometimes it feels like fear or the ego attacks you. Even I think that's where it is. It's almost like an ego attacking you, because if maybe I'm answering my own question here. That it's like the ego knows you're right on the brink of surrendering, and so I'm not sure if I've been very clear. But if anyway, any comments at all, I'd appreciate it. Thanks.
Well, there isn't another ego to surrender to. The only thing that has bullied you all your years on earth here, so it seems, is your ego. And you have surrendered, along with me, your right to your life in heaven, seemingly, and eternity, by surrendering your divine will to live divinely. And so you've got to find that link. You can't wake up immediately in eternity. You have to get a course of rehabilitation to restabilize yourself. And so if you will listen to me, says Jesus, or your course or your guide, you will begin to stabilize with balancing wheels, as it were, the reassociation of the idea that you, along with me, are spirit, are not flesh. I can't expect you to give up an identity immediately when you haven't learnt your true one. You can't leave hospital until your amnesia is gone and your memory restored, or you'd be wandering around not knowing what you were, who you were, what you were doing. The idea of fear of this is merely the appeals of the ego to come backwards. But fear is meaningless, and every answer will be given to you and to me, every answer. Cynthia says, just cutting in, I was very fearful of facing my guilt of all the unloving acts in my life. Now I know I am forgiven and forgiving. I will be released from it all. It's a reversal that is necessary, isn't it, Cynthia, as it seems, a separate mind to me or mine, which of course it's not at all. Yes, I acknowledge your comments, Enoch, and Colleen says, feels like 10 steps forward, 3 steps back, etc. That's an interesting perception, Colleen. It may be upside down, it might be right forward, it might be the right way up. Welcome, I am a miracle worker and Super Jesus. Special wings with which to fly. So, Colleen, board the right flight. And it's only vertical. Do you understand me? You are not here to improve a human being or take her with you when you fly or learn through processes of pain exactly how difficult this course is, and this is what the ego would have you believe. But if you will work with me vertical, you've heard of vertical takeoff, haven't you, Maz? Yes. Thought so. You know those aeroplanes that take off vertically from the ground? I'm one of those, says Jesus. Step on board. All this bullshit of the Never Never Land, of the ego, I will eventually get there through progress and process and so on, and being nice to others. Surely there must be some better way. Oh, nice. I just moved in with a pilot. What beautiful symbolism. I do remember this. I seem to recall something about a pilot with you, Colleen, before in what seems to be horizontal time sequence, which sequence, of course, we've already left. Looking backward from our perception on board the plane. Or you could say we're looking over what we're flying through. The flight is vertical. And you're going to take all your washing from grey to white right now, right? Carry on. You can look down in the process, but it's much more interesting to look up, isn't it, Glenn Paris? I look up at the skies, and I am forgiven, and I'm flying. Who am I? A human mind? Or a dreamer performing a miracle? I'm flying. What does that mean? With special wings. Come on board. What am I flying through? Whether it's vertical or whatever, what am I doing? Clever. I'm rearranging time-space. Because it's my illusion. I made the ether. Do you hear me calling? Look within you. I'm still alive, as I was yesterday, and the day you call before, and the never never you call tomorrow. I'm winging everywhere. And I'm going to be at every point of the journey with you. I can't go anywhere but with you. It's a sort of homing missile. And it can't miss its shots because it's permanently joined with what you are. I am holy. Scud missile. There's absolutely, absolute power in me. There is no ability whatsoever to forget the clouds of forgetting, because I'm going to steer the Spitfire, the Scud missile, through them. I am the one pointed focus of mind, of let thine eye be single. And thy body will be full to burst of bright, beautiful light. That is Glenn Paris. At dinner with his woman over there in Nefertiti or wherever. Hawaii at last count or wherever. In the universe. Inside. The insanity of reasoning. Which Einstein, of course, saw perfectly. Circumvent this little place. on the ray of a sunbeam. And you'll find you come back here because it's nothing. It doesn't exist. So forgive me. Says Jesus, this is Christmas. I'm hiding in a place very near to you right now. All on board, what's cooking? Dio, Cliff Donovan, this is the end of sacrifice. The eternal is the win again, the wing on which we fly. I'm going to, all on board, I'm going to hand this microphone over in case there's anybody who cannot hear me, or in case I am transmitting actually into the eternal and not through a radio show, and see what's happening out in the illusion. Thank you.